Blog Talk Radio.
This is the UR Tennis Network. We are the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate tennis enthusiasts who promote our sport relentlessly. We strive continuously to bring news and information for players, parents, coaches, officials, businesses, and anyone else who loves tennis. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis may not be interested in them.
Happy Monday, and welcome to the Parenting Aces radio show on Blog Talk Radio's UR Tennis Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and I'm so glad you guys are listening today. Hope that you learn a lot. I know I'm going to look forward to learning a ton from our guest today, and we have a great show for you. Our guest this afternoon is Dallas Oliver of Tennis Recruiting Network, and you guys are probably already very familiar with Tennis Recruiting. They are the rating and ranking website that most of our kids tend to rely on for their junior rankings. Certainly, a lot of the college coaches use the website as well for help with recruiting our kids. And Dallas is an integral part of the Tennis Recruiting Network family and has a lot of great information to share with us today. They are in the middle of their star rating period right now, which happens twice a year, and so the timing is really perfect to have Dallas on the show to talk about how their ratings and rankings work and how these rating periods operate and how your child can maximize his or her opportunities during this 8-week period right now. Also, there is an article on parentingaces.com for those of you who want to check it out, that gives a little bit of the background about tennis recruiting, how it came to be, and how it all works, and how you as parents and your kids can use it to really maximize opportunities. So I encourage you to go to parentingaces.com, and if you just type tennis recruiting in the search box, you'll pull up the article. So before I bring Dallas on the air, I want to just play a quick word from our sponsor so we can stay on the air. And when we come back, Dallas Oliver of Tennis Recruiting.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
Welcome back to Parenting Aces. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and I'm so glad you're tuning in today to hear from our guest, Dallas Oliver of Tennis Recruiting Network. Dallas is local here in Atlanta, so we are just thrilled that he had a little bit of time in his schedule to give to us and share information. So, Dallas, I'm bringing you on the line. You are now on the air live. Welcome to Parenting Aces.
Hey, Lisa. Happy Monday.
Thank you. Same to you. And I don't know about you, but I am still in massive recovery from the Australian Open and those middle-of-the-night finals. So for those of you listening, if my voice sounds a little less than perfect today, that would be the reason. I haven't been getting a whole lot of sleep.
Yeah, I'm sure that's the case for most of Tennis Nation. So.
Yeah, I think so. So, Dallas, let's just jump right in here and talk about quickly just how tennis recruiting came to be, a little bit about the history and your role in the company. Why don't you share that with us?
Sure. So, I know you talked with Julie and Doug Regg. So there was a company called Sirius Software that had a long history with the USGA doing rankings. They had a tournament management system, which was sort of the forerunner to the TDM management program that the USGA tournament directors use. And then their son, Shannon Regg, he got involved, and he has done most of their internet work. And so, yeah, that's where tennisinformation.com came from, which was kind of revolutionized the way tennis was done. You know, rankings used to be something that were done, you know, once or twice a year, and then suddenly with having, you know, draws on the web and you know, became possible to get results more frequently, and so these weekly rankings came into being. So over time, though, you know, the USGA ended up, you know, for pretty good reasons. Sirius Software is a pretty small family company. And so, you know, the USGA decided to protect themselves a little bit and bring a lot of that stuff in-house. And so when they did that, you know, I knew Shannon really well, and we were good friends. And I was kind of at a place where I was looking to do something new. And so I kind of talked to Shannon about it and said, gosh, you know, you have experience doing this rankings and everything like that. You know, have you thought about, you know, doing a, you know, some kind of a recruiting site like they have for football and basketball? Because that's one of the things, you know, for these sites like Scout and Rivals, you know, they do this, you know, they essentially do kind of what tennis recruiting does but for football and basketball, but they're much bigger scale. You know, you have to rank point guards, which involves having people go out and watch games and evaluate quarterbacks and point guards and pitchers and that sort of thing. Whereas tennis is easy because you can do, you know, you can do head-to-head, you have head-to-head results. So you can do it on an objective measure rather than something subjective. So anyway, so you know, we decided, and so we thought that there was a nice niche there. There's a big gap between the junior tennis. You know, tennis recruiting is a junior tennis site, but you know, we have the college. You know, for 99% of people, college is the ultimate goal as far as playing and competing. Yes, and so you know, by doing some things that were unique and didn't compete with the USGA, like ranking by graduation year. You know, the USGA had moved to a point system at that point, which had its pros and cons, but you know, I think the rankings typically are not as predictive of results. And so going to the head-to-head system and then ranking by graduation year seemed to be something that coaches really wanted and gives players and parents a pretty good idea of how they stack up against people that they're competing against for roster spots or scholarships. So anyway, so Shannon and I talked about that and around Christmas of 2004, and we kind of self-funded it and worked on it throughout 2005 and launched it in September of 2005. And we've been going pretty strong. We're in our eighth year and having a lot of fun with it.
Well, I for one am 100% reliant on your site and am one of those people that logs in pretty much every day to kind of see what's new and what articles y'all have posted. And one of my favorite features is the interviews that y'all do with the various coaches at the different schools. And I think the information y'all provide is completely invaluable to tennis families, and so I thank you for all your work, and I am very grateful that y'all are out there. One of the things I wanted to ask you is, there's been a lot of talk lately about the points per round ranking system versus the star system versus universal tennis ratings versus tennis recruiting. Can you kind of compare and contrast all those different rating and ranking systems and talk about what's good about each of them, what maybe, you know, could use some improving on each of them, and how parents should be tapping into the different ratings and rankings to get a clear picture of how their child is doing in terms of developing?
Gotcha, sure. That's a great question. So at one level, there are two basic ways. They're probably ladder types of ways, like they use for, you know, chess and things like that. But I'm very familiar with two basic ways of ranking, and you know, one of those is a points-based system, like what the USGA and the ITF, the ATP and the WTA use. And then the other one is where basically you earn, you know, you go to an event. Each event is assigned a point value. You get your level ones, twos, threes, fours, fives at the national, sectional, district level, what have you. And you earn points basically from that tournament. So it doesn't matter. I mean, they do have some like the USCA, for example, has some bonus points that you can earn based on who you beat. But by and large, it's where you play, you know, what events that you're playing in. Whereas, you know, a head-to-head system, like what we use at Tennis Recruiting, is what matters is who you play. You know, so you could play in a local tournament, and if you knock off, you know, if you play Andy Murray in a local tournament and beat him, you get the same amount of credit than if you played him in the finals of the Australian Open. So those are kind of two. I'll talk about universal tennis in a minute, but those are kind of the two basic ways that rankings get done. Now, each of them has their pros and cons. The biggest feature of the point system, the nicest feature of the point system is it's very simple. It's very easy to understand. You know going into things that this event is worth however many points it's worth, and so if you're talking about the USGA, where you're talking about being able to understand what you're going to be ranked, and of course those rankings are used for getting into tournaments and things like that. I can certainly understand why you'd want to have something very, very simple to understand, right? You take your top eight tournaments or what have you. There's no downside. As far as tanking matches and things like that. There's no downside to losing. There's a lot of good things about a points-based system. One of the things, though, that's not so good about a points-based system is if everybody doesn't have access to the same events. Because in general, right, the tournaments that are in California or Florida or Texas are a lot tougher than ones that might be in other parts of the country. And so, you end up having these situations. I mean, the quote-unquote point chasing. I don't think point chasing is as bad of a problem as people talk about necessarily. You hear all kinds of horror stories. But I think that points-based systems work really well if everybody can travel easily to all of the different events. So, in some of these countries, in France or these places abroad that have point systems, or at a local level, having a points-based system, like in the state of Georgia, for example, having a points-based system, makes some sense. I think when you start talking about national rankings at the U.S. level, it's a lot harder. Not everybody can get to everything, and so that's at least theoretically makes the point chasing an issue. Tennis Recruiting with the head-to-head system, I guess its cons are that it is very complicated. I mean, we that's probably the biggest thing that we get questions on. We answer lots of email and talk to people on the phone a lot because they played this week and they won a match or two. They did pretty well this week and their ranking went down. That's because it's a complex system. The people that you played may have people that you've played in the past may have lost. You lose some tournaments from the previous year. There's all kinds of things that can happen. So the complexity is quite difficult.
When I wrote my article, I had interviewed Doug for the article, and
sure.
He was trying to explain to me all the different algorithms and pieces that go into developing the rankings, and my head started spinning. It's
there's certainly an element of making sausage in
yeah.
there. We like it. I mean, we like the but it is very complex, and that's actually something that we may change in the future. We've looked at other algorithms. We may introduce. Right now we have our college recruiting list, which is based on our algorithm, and then we also have an RPI, the tennis RPI rankings that we have. At some point we've been looking at some other algorithms. We might introduce a third one alongside of those, and if it goes well for a year or two, we might switch to that algorithm if it behaves well, and if it's easier to explain, we may switch someday down the future, but down the road. But anyway, the So to get back to your question, one of the things that I really like about the fact that, you know, with the USGA and the tennis recruiting rankings is that, you know, everybody, obviously, if you're playing U.S. tennis, you know, you have to focus somewhat on the USGA rankings, at least, because you have to be able to qualify for tournaments. And if you also care about your tennis recruiting ranking, the nice thing about that is that it's hard to game both systems, right? I mean, sometimes people, you know, you talk about point chasing as a way to game the point system. Well, you know, if you chase points, that's fine. That's all well and good, but it's not going to help your tennis recruiting ranking. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. with tennis recruiting, it's who you beat, not where you played. And so, you know, if you travel someplace, you know, you go to Hawaii for a tournament and it's a weak field, you know, you win, you go three rounds rather than, you know, winning the one round you might win in Minnesota. Yeah, that doesn't necessarily, it'll help your USGA ranking, but it won't necessarily help your tennis recruiting ranking. And likewise, you know, if you drop out of the tournament because you're trying to avoid somebody that you might lose to gain your tennis recruiting ranking, well, that doesn't help your USGA ranking. So it's very difficult, I think, to try to game both rankings. So I think that's a nice feature of that.
So it's important to have both, is what you're saying.
I think so. I don't know if it's structural or anything like that, but I think that it's handy that people care about both. I think that the fact that people care about both, you know, it's harder, it's more difficult to try to game the system. I think. So, and just to touch on, since you talked about the universal tennis ranking, so I like, you know, those, you know, Dave Fish and Dave Howell, all those guys that, and you had Dave Howell on, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And that's right. I listened to that one. So I like the idea of the universal tennis ranking. I mean, I think it's, you know, certainly you do have all of these disparate ranking systems where, you know, it's hard. You know, I mean, we one of the problems that we have is when people get late into their senior years, they start to drop off of our rankings because they've quit playing junior tournaments. A lot of times college coaches will encourage you to play professional, you know, play you know, open tournaments or professional tournaments or, you know, IPA events, things like that. And so, and we don't, of course, use those tournaments in our, those results in our rankings. And so, you know, a lot of times you'll see these, you know, Jack Sock and people like that that don't have a ranking at the end. So the idea of using all results is, and also being able to offer events that level 10 event or, you know, 8 through 10 or something like that. I think those are great ideas. I do think that one of the biggest problems that they have, and I've talked extensively with them, is it's really, really hard to get all that data together. That's our biggest expense. You know, we use the USGA and the ITF results for our rankings, and it's really, really difficult. You know, you'd be amazed how many different John Smiths there are. Sometimes they have multiple. Sometimes they'll have multiple USGA numbers, or, you know, it's just really hard. And the data gets to be poorer quality when you use some of these other data sources. They don't have, you know, hometowns and states and things like that. So, you know, it's the more data that you use, the harder your problem is. And they, of course, want to use all data from everywhere. And so I think that's a big mountain to climb. So I wish them luck, and I hope that they can maybe get some of these governing bodies to work with them. But I'm not really sure how that's going for them. But I think that's the biggest hurdle that they have to cross, and I think it'll take them a long time to get established. With a national kind of rating that's meaningful.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, let me real quick give out our call-in number in case those listening have questions for you. That call-in number, as always, is 714-583-6853. Again, 714-583-6853. If you have any questions for Dallas Oliver of Tennis Recruiting, we'd love to hear from you. So Dallas, let's move down the list because I got a list of questions for you. One of the big issues that, you know, I hear, and I'm sure you guys hear too, is, and especially now that you guys are in the midst of your 8-week rating period, How does a player boost their ranking with you guys? How do they get that next star or move up the list with you guys?
Sure. Well, it's not really complicated. I mean, like I said, our system uses a head-to-head algorithm. And so, you know, in a nutshell, if you beat people that are ranked at your level or above you, it pushes you up. And if you lose to people who are ranked below you, it pulls you down. And so, you know, so it's pretty good. It's pretty simple. So, mm-hmm. you know, we encourage people to play tournaments where, you know, not necessarily the toughest tournaments they can get into. Although that's a good idea to go and see what it takes to win at that level. But you know, we encourage people to play in events. They shouldn't be playing at events where they sweep through the tournament. I mean, if you're good, you shouldn't be playing in local level tournaments where you sweep through and win the finals and don't drop a set. That's fine, but you know, it's fun to win championships and things like that. But if you're beating peak players that are way, way below you, it's not going to help you ranking at all. At least not at tennis recruiting. So we generally encourage people to try to compete in events where, you know, maybe they win a couple of two or three rounds, but they're challenged. And then of course it's improving your game. And you know, I'm not really going to comment too much on that. But as far as the ranking is concerned, you know, playing competitive matches against, you know, where you're playing people that are at your level or slightly above you in the rankings, or significantly above you in the rankings. You know, if you lose to somebody who's a lot better than you, it's not going to hurt you very much. You know, mm-hmm. If I'm ranked number 200 and I lose to the number 25 guy, well, I'm supposed to, and I'm probably not going to go down any. So that's in general what we do, is to try to encourage people to play, you know, to find some competitive tournaments and get out there and compete in those.
Well, I don't know how much you follow the Parenting Aces blog, but if you do, and those who are listening, if you do, I've written quite a few articles about life on the alternate list with USTA tournaments. And
sure.
And one of the big challenges, especially for players in their age-up year or in the 6 months prior to their age-up year, is being able to get into the tournaments where you do get to play those better players and you have those opportunities. And, you know, that's where kind of the quote-unquote point-chasing issue really comes to light. And trying to find that balance between your child earning a high enough or a low enough ranking. I'm always confused about how to word that. You want to be ranked. You want your ranking to be lower, but you want to be higher on the list. You want to be toward the top. So to get your player to the point where their ranking gets them into those events where they do have the opportunities to play the better players, it sometimes requires you to take them to tournaments with a less competitive field so they can blow through and earn a bunch of points and boost their USTA ranking number, which then allows them to work toward a higher tennis recruiting ranking, right? I mean, that would be kind of one way to play both systems at the same time. And I don't mean play it with a negative connotation, but I mean, you know, this is the system we work within, so we have to understand how it all mashes together and you know, what we need to do to help our players achieve their highest level.
Yep, that's the you put that very succinctly and very well. That's true. I was certainly answering the question from the point of view of the tennis recruiting ranking, but you're right. I mean, obviously, like I said before, you have to pay attention to the USTA rankings and the age-up years and all that kind of stuff to qualify for the tournaments you want to get into. So, yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, I know there's a lot of planning. I mean, there's a lot of, you got to think about it and be very careful about, you know, how you want to map out your summer months and things like that.
And quite honestly, I mean, the focus is very different when your child is 10, 11, 12 versus once they're really in their last year of 14s, moving into 16s and 18s and starting to think more about being marketable as a college recruit, you know, in the younger years, and I know you guys you don't even include them on your site until they're in sixth grade. Is that correct?
Yeah, sixth grade. We start ranking in sixth grade. Some of the younger kids have, if they're playing up in the 12, they will have profiles on our site, but we don't really rank them. They're just there for completeness. If you have a sixth grade daughter that beats a fifth grader or a fourth grader, and that fourth grader shows up on the sixth grader's result list, and the fourth or fifth grader will actually have a page on our site. But we don't do much with that. It's just kind of there for completeness, and we start to talk to them when they hit sixth grade. Yeah.
Got it. So, I mean, maybe we can touch a little bit on, how a sixth, seventh, eighth grader and his or her parents might be using tennis recruiting versus how a high school kid and his or her parents would use tennis recruiting.
Right. So we view, as far as using tennis recruiting, I mean, there's a few reasons that we start in sixth grade. One of them is just to get our name out, right? I mean, we obviously have a continuously turning over customer base, right? I mean, every year we have by the time kids get to be juniors or seniors, we have a very high percentage of the base of the people that play reasonable level tournaments. They know about tennis recruiting, but the kids that are in sixth and seventh grade. My oldest daughter's in seventh grade, and a lot of her friends that play tennis don't know about tennis recruiting yet. They're starting to play state tournaments and things like that, and they're just starting to learn about it. So, we've talked about starting later, starting in ninth grade, but the biggest reason that we start in sixth grade is to get our name out. That's one thing, and also just so that parents can kind of see. They can kind of see where their kids are, right? I mean, you can start to understand, you can start to understand how our rankings work and things like that. So as far as using tennis recruiting when you're a sixth, seventh, eighth grader, I think it's more, just kind of understanding how the site works. Certainly we have plenty of parents that have fifth graders and fourth graders that want to put their kids' gear on, and they're, they want to commit to Stanford as a fourth grader, things like that, which is always kind of comical. We review all the updates, and we reject those and just list them as a high interest in Stanford. I'm sure that
I hope you send them to Parenting Aces to read.
Exactly. I think that. For sixth to eighth graders, it's more for parents and for kids to kind of just learn. It's fun to read about, Ryan Schneider committing to North Carolina or whatnot. Fun to read some of the articles, and like you said, read some of the roundtables we have with coaches or things like that. Or just, we also have we're the only place where you can get coverage of the clay court nationals and the hard court nationals, right? We have Clay Court National Week and Hard Court National Week, where we, run eight articles, one on each of the national championships, and at least some of those don't have any coverage except for on our site. So,
right.
So I think that like you said, we provide a good resource for people to start chewing on things. But then yes, once kids get into high school, we do have, there are plenty of college coaches that do look at kids, as young as as freshmen and sophomores. And just sort of take a look at kids and not just their ranking, but if you list if you go on and you list that you're interested in Division III schools, well college coaches can see that. If I'm the coach of Middlebury, I can make a custom rank list of kids that have at least a 3.0 grade point average that are interested in schools in the Northeast. And so, even if your child lives in Texas but lists, is interested in schools that are up there, even if it's not Middlebury, the Middlebury coach that'll show up on the Middlebury coach's custom rank list. So they start to think about those things, and of course the NCAA rules are changing, they're allowing more contact and things like that. And so, the college coaches do that kind of thing. So, so I'd say that, Once you get into the the high school years in particular, you know, if you're willing to, you know, with a free account, you can put information on our site. You can list schools of interest. You can list, you know, kinds of academic areas that you want to study. You can put academic information on. You can put contact information on, things like that. And that's, you know, whatever you're comfortable with. You know, we encourage people to put as much information on as they're comfortable with, and then that information is only made available to college coaches. You know, and college coaches, you know, they have a variety of tools. We have a coaching a service called Coaching Advantage that about 900 coaches, not 900 different programs subscribe to. And, you know, they can do a lot of things. They can, like I said, you know, one thing they can do is they can make these custom rank lists. So, you know, I want kids who have at least a, a 1,200 on the SAT, you know, math and verbal. I want a list of kids who are interested in Ivy League schools, you know, that kind of thing. So they can make custom rank lists. They also have watch lists. You know, they can see who's looking at their profile page. So if you are logged in and you go, you know, you go look at the Duke page, you know, and you know, the, you know, Ramsey Smith or Jamie Ashworth can see that that you looked at their page, and they'll maybe take a look back at you, kind of like a, you know, poking somebody on Facebook. And so, and cool. If they want, they can add you to their watch list. And with the watch list, they get notified. You know, they get notified if certain things happen. If your ranking goes up, you know, right after you play a tournament, if you have a birthday coming up, things like that. So they can add kids to their watch list, and that kind of notifies the coach when something interesting has happened with one of their one of the people who've been looking. Yeah, it's kind of fun. So. You know, so
I'm gonna interrupt you one sec, Dallas. We have a caller, and they've been on hold for a few minutes, so I'm going to bring them on the air and just see what they got to say. Hang on one second. Caller, we got you from area code 786-953. Are you there?
Hi, Lisa. It's Antonio Mora. Hi, Dallas.
Well, hey, Antonio. Yeah, how are you?
Good. How are you guys doing? I tuned in a little late, about 15 minutes ago, so I hope I'm not going to ask a question that's already been answered. But you know, you guys were talking about tennis recruiting and how the tennis recruiting system works, and you were also talking about the chasing points issue and all this and all the changes that are going on with the USTA. Could you see a way of creating a system that, you know, the issue involved with these 2014 changes where they're cutting down on all these tournaments and all that is because the ranking system that the USTA uses, which is based on points per round, encourages people to go out and play as many tournaments as possible. And, of course, that's expensive, and traveling around the country is expensive. Could you see a way of coming up with some ranking system that would encourage people to play tournaments, but at the same time would not hurt them? Because in the old days, the star system, the rap on that was that if you got yourself ranked highly enough quickly in any given year, you were disincentivized from playing again because losses could bring you down. Is there some way of coming up with a head-to-head algorithm that also encourages regular play?
Sure. Great question. So two things. One of the things, I don't know if you were on when we were talking about it, we were talking about the fact that given that you have the two different ranking systems, the USTA point system as well as tennis recruiting's head-to-head system, you do have to everybody has to pay attention to the USTA system to qualify for tournaments. So play is encouraged a little bit just there. But the other thing that we've done, we had implemented STAR for the USTA, and our algorithm does have some of the features that the STAR algorithm had. But one of the things that we do is we do have a decay factor. So we use a year's worth of results, but wins, you know, the wins kind of fade away as you get further away. There's an exponential back off in the way your wins help you. So if you don't play month after month, your ranking will go down. Your wins will be less valuable than they are right after you achieve them. So we do have, that's one way to do it. That's what we do. And there's a zillion ways. There's, if you look around the head-to-head ranking algorithms, there's dozens of them. So That's what we've chosen to do.
And do you think? I mean, do you think that we could, that it would make sense for the USTA to move away from PPR and go towards something that was more head to head?
Yeah, I mean, they used to do that. I mean, like, you know, again, we were talking about it a little bit earlier, but you know, I think that, you know, that the USTA moved to the point system. There were a variety of reasons, but you know, some of the reasons that makes some sense is the fact that it's very simple, it's easy to explain and understand, and I know that was one of the things we get questions all the time about our ranking scheme because it's very complicated and sometimes counterintuitive. Whereas at least the point system is a simple system to understand. So and also, like we said, it encourages play. That was an explicit goal of the point system, was to encourage more play. So with the point system, of course, you're never penalized for playing. So. So those were two of the reasons the USGA went to the point system in the first place, and they both make some sense. There's lots of drawbacks that we've touched on and other people have touched on as well. I don't know. I think that the USGA, when they used STAR, I think it worked. I think that there would have been other ways for them to address the problems that they wanted to address. But you know, the USGA is a big organization, and they've got lots of committees, and it's a tough nut to crack.
Well, Antonio, you're opening the door to my next question, so thank you for the segue. which Dallas, my next question is, how will these 2014 changes impact tennis recruiting, and what are you guys kind of doing to gear up for that?
Sure. So, you know, one of the things when you have a national ranking, or actually any ranking, is that you really need to have a good amount of cross play. You need to have cross play between, if you have isolated pools of people that compete, you know, you end up running into problems with the points-based system. When we first started off, for example, one of the things that we did, we didn't really understand the way the Texas tournaments worked. And we included one of their we included some of the tournaments from one of their lower levels of play. And so what we ended up happening is the players that were very good in that lower level, you know, had very gaudy records, and they ended up with artificially high rankings on our site. And we figured that out and addressed that and got that fixed. But that's an example. You know, if you end up having pools of people, for example, if you've got somebody who just plays in their country club, I mean, just, of course, doesn't happen. Those aren't USTA sanctioned events that we would use. But somebody dominates their country club, and they never lose. They're very difficult to rank against other people. So we do all that we can to avoid that, and try to make sure that there's a good amount of cross play. With the changes, certainly, you know, one of the things that would happen is one of the things that they're trying to do with the earned advancement is have a much smaller number of people at the top playing nationally, and most of the other levels playing within your section. So yeah, it was certainly a concern of ours that by eliminating these open events and eliminating the ability for you to travel, you know, for the ability for a 3-star player to travel and play a tournament in another area, by eliminating that, you know, it is certainly a concern for us. So what we've decided to do is this, you know, I know you've written about it a little bit on your site as well, is try to encourage some of these open events, so some more of these sectional open events. And so we have this initiative that we started to work on last summer, and we announced in the fall, in November, December, we call it National Showcase Series, which are basically, you know, essentially, we, you know, the deal is for a tournament director to run one of these national showcase series, which will, you know, count for tennis recruiting ranking points count towards the tennis recruiting ranking. They essentially have to be an open tournament, right? They have to accept people from other sections. Yeah, and they can't really give preference to their own section. And so, you know, and they've been, they we certainly have had a lot of interest. We'll have to see how they go. I'm not sure, you know, given that 2013, the changes haven't really gone through, you know, it'll be interesting to see how many people travel to other sections to play in these. And we've got about, you know, about 20 or two dozen, 20 to 24 of these events on the schedule across the country. And we have a couple more in some other sections that we don't have represented yet coming online. So we're trying to do that. And a lot of those are going to accept all entrants. You know, there's several of them that if you go look at their Tennis Link page, they're going to, if you apply to the tournament, they're going to accept you. And so,
that was my next question. That's a question that had come up is for the tournaments that aren't doing that, how will they handle the selection process?
What they're supposed to do is be open, and they're supposed to essentially accept people based on their national ranking. I don't know all the details. Julie has done, as far as the technical requirements. I mean, in essence, it has to be an open tournament where they accept people from all sections, and that's the basic thing. It has to be a USTA-sanctioned tournament that's open. I guess, unfortunately, I can't really answer any of the technical details, but they're supposed to accept, all comers, and like I said, there are quite a few of them that are going to accept everybody that applies. They'll just put another event in place if they need to.
I love that idea, I got to tell you, and I did do an article on the National Showcase events. For those of you listening who haven't read it on the blog, take a look, because it includes a list of the events that are coming up this year. But the one thing I really love about them more than anything is it gives a kid an opportunity to have some different competition, looks at some different kids from different parts of the country, and, it may or may not count toward their USTA points per round ranking if they don't reside in the section where the tournament's being held, but it's not always just about their ranking, and as parents, I think it's really important that we get the message out there that sometimes you take your kid to an event not because it's going to help their ranking, but because it's going to help them develop as a player.
Yeah, I mean, that's there's a lot of reasons. I mean, I when we read about that, I mean, of course, all the old tournaments, back in the 90s and the early 2000s, that even in the throughout the 2000s, that have faded away, the Gator Bowl and the Copper Bowl and all these tournaments where people would, very well-run tournaments, that people would travel to and they kind of just made vacations out of, or, if they were going to go visit a college, they'd go visit two or three colleges around the tournament, or they had relatives that lived, in another part of the country, and they'd plan a family reunion around a tournament, things like that. It was kind of sad when a lot of these structural things were going into place to eliminate that. So, hopefully this will allow all of those things, like you said, the development and opportunities to travel and to do different things. Most of them are on holiday weekends or during the summer. So, there are times when, if you can travel and want to, you've got that choice. So, we'll see. Well, it'll be interesting to see how they do. We have high hopes for them. We'll just see how the year goes.
Antonio, are you committing to take your son to some of these this year? I'm putting you on the hook.
Yeah. I'll see. I think there's one up in Daytona that I may try to make our way up there to. not too long of a drive.
I know you guys have family in different parts of the country like we do, and this has been one of my big concerns with the 2014 changes is, how is my kid going to go visit grandparents or go visit a sister on the West Coast and have an opportunity to play in front of them?
I don't know if you and I have discussed this, Lisa, before, but my family goes and spends the summer in the Chicago area at my in-laws' place, and get out of the heat of Miami and get up there, and there's a great place for my son to train there in Lake Bluff where the Red Licky brothers train and some French coaches. It's a great experience for him to go train up there, and then my father-in-law drives him to national tournaments in the Midwest, and even he's driven him down to play zonals in Knoxville, Tennessee. So he ends up playing you know, in an area that is drivable from Chicago. It makes my life a lot easier because I don't have
sure.
to be the one traveling and taking vacation days and things. And that's an opportunity that's going to be lost. And he's made some of his best friends from, you know, playing in some of those tournaments around the Midwest. So that's it's one of the things that they don't consider at all.
Right. And, I mean, it'll be interesting to watch, you know, how these showcase events play out. Dallas, do you know, do you guys have some kind of evaluation methods in place? Are y'all talking about different ways to evaluate the success of these events as they go forward?
Yeah, I mean, there's, again, a good question. So, you know, obviously one of the things we're trying to do is to make sure that these events do attract, you know, again, for us, you know, it's all about just thinking about the rankings. I mean, certainly there's some, you like to think there's some altruism there as well. But, you know, we do want to have people from other sections competing in these to get the connectivity going. And it doesn't have to be, it really doesn't have to be a big number, right? I mean, if you have a tournament, like, you know, one of the ones that we have in St. Louis, right, if you have a few people from other sections traveling to those and competing into them, it doesn't have to be a huge high percentage. You get, you know, lots of now I can you know, the Midwest and Missouri Valley, I have ways to connect those together. And in fact, you know, for us, for our purposes, you know, it could even be better than it was before, because I don't know that there were necessarily a lot of two-star players traveling. So, and with these showcase tournaments, you know, you should have more opportunities. We're not talking about national opens. These potentially could, so our rankings actually could get better with these national showcase tournaments. It's something we might have done anyway, even if the USTA wasn't making changes. But yeah, we certainly will look. I mean, we've talked to these tournament directors about, you know, how to market, you know, across the country. And of course, we try to help out with that. You know, we include it in our newsletters, and we have a box on our homepage and a page on our site that has that lists all these tournaments. You know, we'll certainly try to promote them as best we can. And but yeah, I mean, we'll you know, it'd be interesting to see how it goes this year. And we're not really sure what to expect. You know, we had one in California, you know, right between Christmas and New Year's, and he did get a few, you know, he got a player or two from Texas and from Arizona and from Southern California going up to NorCal. So, but, you know, we only really announced that one a couple of weeks before the event. So, but even that one, you know, probably helped. I don't think he, you know, when he ran that tournament in the past, it was all NorCal. So, so we'll see. I mean, you know, the first events are coming up in March and April. And so it'll be interesting to see how those go.
What's success look like for those tournaments? I mean, you know, in a perfect world, what do y'all want to see happen with them?
In a perfect world, we would have, you know, some, realistically, it'll be a small percentage, but if we got 10% of the players, you know, ish, coming from other sections, that'd be great.
Okay.
I know that, you know, Robert did that. We kind of tried, Robert Sassaville, I know you know, good, both of you guys know him down in Atlanta, right? You know, his Georgia Junior Open, we sort of piloted and pitched as one of these showcase series tournaments as kind of a guinea pig, and it did great. I mean, ended up getting entries from 25 or 30 different states. I think his event was going on at the same time as at the clay courts, and so he sold it as, you know, if he didn't get into the clay courts, you know, come down here and play in the Georgia Junior Open, and you know, he ended up getting, you know, he had. A huge number, a record number of applicants from other states. So, but he still had, you know, he still had 80 to 90% of his field was still from Georgia. But,
right.
But for us, that was a huge success. So.
And the interesting thing about that tournament, because my son plays that tournament every year, because it's an hour from our house. But the interesting thing about it is it's in Rome, Georgia, in July. And it's hot as blazes there. I mean, miserable hot. But he gets incredibly huge numbers of players every year. The kids love coming to that tournament. And he just does a phenomenal job with that event, having, you know, lots of perks for the kids. I mean, they have snow cones at all the sites and, you know, things like that. Lots of opportunities for the kids to hang out. And it's boys and girls, all age groups, which is one of the things that makes the tournaments fun, you know, for the kids to be able to be there with their families and to see their friends of the other gender and hang out and all of that.
Yep.
So, you know, it's always interesting to me that despite the fact that it's in the hottest time of year and one of the most humid places
right.
on the planet, he still gets gobs and gobs and gobs of families coming in.
Yeah. And you know, that's, you know, just to you know, I'm actually not trying to take pot shots at the point system, but you know, one of the unfortunate side effects of the point system was it really did eliminate, you know, the free market aspects of tournaments and tournament directors. You know, in the old world with the head-to-head rankings, when the USTA did things in the head-to-head system, you know, except for the very prestigious tournaments, you know, all the tournaments were basically the same. I mean, if you could get your tournament sanctioned, you know, and you could attract tournament directors would compete to get, you know, large numbers of entrants and good entrants. And so, you know, that's one of the reasons that you ended up having these, you know, the Copper Bowl and the Gator Bowl and the Georgia Junior Open and all these different things. You know, tournament directors essentially competed. And if you put a good product, you know, if you ran a good tournament and could attract the kinds of players that people wanted to play against, well, then you had a good tournament and people would want to go to your tournament. You know, when you introduce the points aspect into play, well, you know, now if your tournament has a lot of points, your tournament's important. It doesn't really matter. I'm not saying that point tournaments with a lot of points aren't run well, but you know, your tournament's important because it has a high point value assigned to it, not because it's a well-run tournament. So
right.
Hopefully with these, you know, one of the things about these showcase tournaments is hopefully that will introduce, you know, more of that free market, those aspects back into it. You know, if you run it, you know, if somebody, you know, if Robert Sassoville can run a good tournament at the Georgia Junior Open, he'll get a lot of people to come. And it'll be the same thing with these other tournaments. Some of them will probably succeed. Some of them probably won't do so well. But, you know, it'll give an opportunity for the ones that do well to thrive.
Well, just in case any of the tournament directors are listening to the show or listen to the podcast, from the parent side, let me just say, what makes a great tournament is having all the kids in the same city so they can hang out with their buddies in between their matches, and having things at the tournament sites to keep the kids at the site so they want to hang out there after they're done playing, whether it's, you know, providing pizza or having a ping pong table or whatever it is, but doing things that encourage the kids to actually hang out rather than exit quickly and go back to a hotel room and hang out with mom and dad alone for hours on end. As a parent, I can tell you that's not my preference, to hang out at the Hampton Inn all weekend long. So in case they're listening, I hope they take note of that. Well, Dallas, anything that I haven't asked you about that you want to touch on while I've got you today? Because I know there's just so much information you guys provide on your site, and you know, I'm a regular blogger inner and try to keep up with the articles and the different information, but I'm sure there's stuff that I've missed. And actually, one thing I would love to have you talk a little bit more about in this last 5 minutes is how the coaches specifically, I mean, I know you mentioned they can set up these watch lists for players, but how else are the coaches using your site in terms of deciding who to reach out to?
Sure. So we're fortunate that a lot of coaches do, you know, we like to think that we've come up with a pretty succinct way of presenting a lot of information. So, you know, it's one of the things that we worked very hard on is making it very easy to navigate the site and being able to get access information that you want quickly. And so for, you know, for college coaches, right, they can, you know, they use our resource for a variety of different things. You know, it's a primary way that they get contact information, right? I mean, we have, you know, we've integrated with, you know, some other, recruiting tools that you know, compliance tools and recruiting tools that, that coaches have to be able to, you know, to take information from tennis recruiting and put it into their database that they use to contact players and things like that. So, you know, having good contact information in there is a key thing, because they're constantly looking for that. But they, to some degree, they have the same, you know, they have access to the same information that, that the rest of us have as far as the rankings. But, you know, I think the biggest thing, like I was saying, the biggest thing that they can do, and that they do use, you know, we've refined it a lot over the years, is the ability to come up with their own custom lists, which I also mentioned before, but let me go into it a little bit more. You know, if you coach if you're the coach at the Citadel or Virginia Military Institute or a school like that, I mean, obviously you're, you know, or the Savannah College of Art and Design, right? If you coach at a school that's not a general purpose liberal arts school, you know, you're looking for a different kind of recruit than other people are. And so, you know, like, for example, one of the things that we have is the ability for players and parents to put in, you know, academic areas of interest. So, you know, that was one of the things. We had a couple, I think Savannah College of Art and Design, they didn't purchase our service until we added the ability for players to add that. So they make custom rank lists of people that are interested in design, or arts, or, you know, fashion design, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing, you know, religious schools or military schools, things like that. You know, the MIT, you know, engineering. So as far as making custom rank lists, we give coaches a lot of choices. You know, players with a minimum level of academic, and, you know, minimum academic scores. Or numbers, grades, you know, players interested in certain kinds of majors, players interested in schools in certain parts of the country, players interested in, you know, just Division I schools or Division III schools or junior colleges or whatnot, as well as, you know, we obviously mix in the rankings and mix in where they live. I mean, some coaches, you know, if you're a coach at a Division II school, you know, in Vermont, then, you know, you're probably, you know, more limited in the geographical area that you're interested in recruiting. Your, you know, budget might not be as large and things like that. So, you know, they can restrict, you know, their search to New England if they want to.
I'm hearing you say then, I mean, again, from the parent side, is to make sure that your player puts as much information into their profile as they're comfortable sharing, because
exactly,
the more information that's up there, the more likely there is to be a coach that's looking for that piece of information.
Yep, that's exactly right. I mean, that's one of the things, you know, we have our newsletter coming out tomorrow, and you know, one of the things we mentioned in there is we show the average number of coach views for players that have, you know, listed academic information versus those that don't, and you know, 50%, 60% more coach views for, you know, views by college coaches of their profile if they list that kind of information. And that all comes directly into these custom ranking lists that they can make.
Interesting.
So that's a big tool that, you know, when, you know, Julie usually works with coaches when they sign up, and she helps them, you know, she kind of talks to them about how they recruit, and she usually helps them make their first, you know, custom ranking list or two, and then they quickly realize how powerful it is. And we've got, you know, a long list of feature requests from coaches for, you know, more kinds of lists that they, you know, to support more kinds of lists. And we roll out a feature or two for them each year as part of our ongoing development. That's a big thing. And then, like I said, I think the watch lists are also, you know, as far as you know, they. You know, maybe create these watch lists of players that they're interested in. And the coach, mm-hmm. you know, and being able to see what players looked at their site, too. I mean, you know, there's all kinds of times that we've gotten, you know, head coaches call us up and said, yeah, you know, I'm at a small school, and I got a four, you know, there was a four-star recruit that happened to look at my page, and I got in touch with them, and now they're going to come to my school. And, yeah, you know, I've never had a four-star before. So
that's cool.
You know,
that's very cool.
Yes. So if players go and look around at if you log in and you look at schools that you're interested in, you know, coaches are going to see that, and they may come back and get in touch with you.
That's awesome. I did just get a question via email from you, and we are down to our last few seconds. So those listening live, if we go off the air, the rest of this conversation will appear in the podcast, so please take a look. But I do want to just throw this out at you since I've got you on the line. Sure. I got an email from Tracy who says, since doubles are such an important part of college tennis, are individual doubles rankings in any way figured into the tennis recruiting ratings, or are just combined rankings used?
Right, and that's a great question, and we field that one a lot, because it's true. So, you know, I personally love doubles. You know, I know, you know, Julie and Doug do the rankings, and they're big doubles fans and believers in doubles. We do not use doubles in our rankings at all today. And it saddens us a bit, but there are a number of technical issues that get in the way. And actually, this comes back to the points-based rankings versus the head-to-head-based rankings as well. With points-based rankings, you can assign points to doubles and just award points based on them. With head-to-head systems, it's a little bit more difficult. So we had experimented a little bit with different ways of incorporating doubles rankings, doubles play into our rankings, and they just didn't go well. It was very difficult to figure out exactly how to include those results in our rankings. When you add that to the fact that the quality of the data is generally worse for doubles than it is for singles. And then also the fact that we're kind of almost overwhelmed right now with the data issues that we have. It's very difficult to practically get into our rankings. And so how do we address that? Well, we certainly encourage players to list their doubles results. You know, there are freeform text areas where you can put in your high school play, your highlights, tournament highlights, things like that. And we encourage players to put in their doubles accomplishments and results. So that's one of the things that we do. But it saddens us a little bit, and maybe at some point if we get some time to look at it, we'll make another run at it. But it hasn't gone well in the past. So unfortunately, we don't use doubles play, but we do recognize that doubles is important, and we wish it could be.
Well, it makes perfect sense. I mean, you guys do a phenomenal job, and since we are off the air and just into our background recording, I just want to be sure to say thank you so much. And, I mean, as a parent, I appreciate the service that you guys offer more than you can imagine. And my son is a junkie too, so he's on your site daily, checking out his friends, checking out future opponents, checking the schools that he's interested in, and looking at their recruiting classes, and all of that is just so, so valuable. So thank you for doing it, for taking time out to be on the show, and for always being so available when I've called and emailed with questions. I truly, truly appreciate that. So for those of you listening, thank you for tuning in. I'll have the link to the podcast up at parentingaces.com. Just click on the radio show tab, and you'll see that link later today. And next week, we're going to try again with the Roddicks. So if you tried to tune in last week and encountered our technical difficulties, I apologize again. But Lawrence and Blanche Roddick have agreed to come on the show next week. So please try us again next Monday at noon. Have a great week, and look forward to hearing from you guys via the comments on the blog. Thanks, and have a good one.